All right, family, welcome to the show. My first Facebook Live this week. Been a very busy week, and we're honored to have on the show today from the University of Connecticut, the very distinguished guest, Dr. Thomas Kramer, joins the conversation today. We're talking about reparations. Doc, how are you doing, sir?
Thank you very much. Very well. How are you?
Doing good. Now, you're big time, and you took out time to talk to us. You were recently on CNN.
Yes, with Kamau Bell.
Kamau Bell, and the conversation about reparations, right?
That's right.
Did you get any hate mail?
No, surprisingly not. Over the years that I've done this topic, I always expected I would receive hate mail, but instead I got some really thoughtful comments from people who are descendants of slave owners and who were looking to make amends and advice on that. So I think the country is ready for change.
The country is ready.
I think so.
You have done a lot of research about reparations. You've written about it. You talked about it. You put yourself out there. You've done a lot on race relations. Yes. Period. What make you think that America's ready to write that check, or not just write the check, or to give something back? You know.
Well, to talk about the first step is to talk about the issue, and so far, that was always a long way off. And you know, since the Civil War, basically the topic of reparations has been boiling under the surface. It used to be, you know, a lot of African-American activists talked about the topic, but it never made the mainstream. And now it seems to have hit the mainstream, and a lot of people seem to be willing to talk about it.
Wow. Dr. Kramer is here from University of Connecticut. Okay, what kind of research have you done in regards to reparations? Because you got to figure out who were slaves and the amount and all that. What, tell us about your research.
Well, I originally did research on implicit racial attitudes and how they influence people's opinions on race-related policies. And I picked one policy amongst them. This was in 2006. One policy where no elite opinion leadership was happening. No party had taken a stand. And that was reparations. And at the time, really nobody talked about it in the mainstream. And then I was interested in, well, if we talk about reparations, what order of magnitude are we talking about? What's the outstanding debt? And that's what led me to go ahead and look at free labor market wages in from 1776 to 1865 to see how much the common hourly wage would have been, and then multiply that with the number of hours that slaves had to toil in the United States. And there's detailed records, census records that counted the slave population every year. And so you can estimate roughly how many hours there were available to slave owners. And then I multiplied the two and came up, this was in $2009 dollars, with $14 trillion outstanding debt, compounded at a very conservative 3% interest rate that doesn't even make up for inflation.
Wow. Dr. Kramer, how far down the road have you been on this fight? Like, are you meeting with congressional people, lawmakers?
Not yet. I'm basically doing research, academic research, and I'm getting contacted by media outlets, and I've been invited to be and felt very honored to be on a reparations planning committee organized by Professor William Darity from Duke University, who invited a lot of scholars to come up with a comprehensive report about slavery reparations that's forthcoming.
Wow. What do we know about reparations in regards to other countries?
Well, the reason I got interested in reparations is that, as you can hear from my accent, that I'm originally from Germany, and I grew up with the Holocaust being talked about in every single school subject. And I always felt ashamed about being German. And one day I got the opportunity to express my feelings to a survivor of the Holocaust. This was a couple who in their retirement had relocated from Israel to Germany of all places. And we got to engage on a spiritual journey to Poland, where he was born and where he survived 5 concentration camps and a death march. And our 2 families, one Israeli Jewish and the other German non-Jewish, we went on this journey together. And I was able to express my feelings to him, and he embraced me. And I was stunned by the fact that he could have such a trusting relationship towards Germany and towards young Germans like me at the time. And it's only after he passed away, unfortunately, in 2015, that I learned from his widow that he had received a reparations pension since the 1970s from the West German government. First West Germany and then the German government when it was reunited. And it was a small pension, but I mean, it in old age, it probably made a difference. And I was wondering whether that may have being a symbol to him that Germany was really taking it seriously to change its ways, and that allowed him to live in Germany despite the horrific injustice that he had suffered. I mean, he lost his entire family. He was the sole survivor of his entire, you know, larger family. Yeah. So based on that experience, I thought that reparations is really a promising way to make amends and to bring about reconciliation.
What amount do America owe to descendants of slaves?
Well, there is various estimation methods. One is was developed by Professor William Darity, based on 40 acres and a mule, which was promised to enslaved Americans during the Civil War, and afterwards there were legislative efforts to make that an official reparations bill. It didn't succeed. But what would the land be worth today had, I think, 3 or 4 million freed slaves at the time received those 40 acres and a mule? That's one method. Another method developed by some economists was to take slave prices at the time, and they're recorded, and the price is basically what a buyer would expect to gain from owning a slave. And so you can restore how much value a slave owner would expect to gain from owning a slave. So I call that the price-based method. So one is land-based, one is price-based, and then my method is a wage-based method, where I'm saying what the slave owner expected to gain is not everything that the slave lost. It was asymmetrical. The enslaved lost more than this the slave owners gained, because the enslaved lost their entire freedom, entire control over their lives, all 24 hours of the day, all 365 days of the year.
Right.
The slave owner gained valuable work only during daylight hours. When the slaves are working in the field to produce cash crops, but the slaves did a lot more than that. So that's why I figured taking the entire amount of time that the slaves were around and multiplying that with the wages common at the time would be a conservative way of estimating. And that is conservative because the wages were very low at the time. And the records that I have are only unskilled wage, you know, wages for unskilled labor. Many of the enslaved were skilled. So it's a very, very conservative estimation method.
Wow. I guess the next question would be, do America have the resources to pay for slavery?
That's a good question. Well, I already said that I estimated the amount very conservatively at a very conservative interest rate, 3% interest rate at $14 trillion in 2009 dollars. When you bring that up to 2020, it's $19.7 trillion. And if you use a more realistic interest rate, say 6%, then it explodes to $7 quadrillion. So, I mean, the amounts are gigantic. But with $19 trillion, we would be able to close the wealth gap thoroughly. So I think that would be a reasonable amount. And it's roughly one year's worth of the American GDP. This is a whopping amount. But it probably helps putting it into perspective by looking at other examples of slavery reparations that have been paid, and seeing how they financed it. And the prime example that I can think of is Great Britain, when it abolished slavery in 1833. They paid reparations to the slave owners for losing their property. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think they spent 40% of the national treasury's spending budget, and they went into debt, and that debt was paid off from 1833 all the way to 2015. It was literally just paid off. Wow. And so taking up loans, you know, financing it through loans might be one way. Taxation may be another way. Of course, there could also be something similar to what happened in Germany, where private companies that benefited from slave labor in Germany formed a fund together with the government to pay surviving slave laborers. So that the private business that benefited from slavery would also pay into the fund.
Right. $17 trillion. My calculator doesn't
know. $19 trillion.
I don't know what that equals out to when it comes down to how many living descendants of slaves are in America right now.
Right. I mean, I can only, and in my articles, I basically try to do rough estimates. The idea would be that it would be paid to the African-American descendants of the enslaved. That can be established through genetic family tree research, because we know that people that were, you know, African-Americans listed in the census of 1860 without name, just as property.
Right.
That pop up in the 1870 census with a name, they were most likely enslaved. So historians can reconstruct that pretty well. And so it could, you know, everybody who has, every African-American who has an enslaved ancestor could be eligible. What that number is exactly, I don't know. But I've used people currently identifying as Black or African-American as a rough estimate. Of course, this includes people like Barack Obama, who are not descended from Americans enslaved. Right. But it may also miss some other people. So this is a rough estimate.
Right. Online, someone said, did he say they paid the slave owners? Did say Britain, right? England?
England paid the slave owners. Now, the slaves never received a cent. They paid the slave owners.
Yeah. Any questions or comments? We're on Facebook Live. We're live on YouTube. We're talking about reparations here in America. Tell me the feedback you've been getting, Dr. Kramer. You're a professor at UConn. You're Husky. Very popular college there. When you start talking about reparations among your peers, what are they saying? Doc, you crazy, man.
Quite to the contrary. I mean, a lot of people are seem ready to engage in a conversation about it. You know, the amount, this is just, I'm not suggesting that this is the amount that should be paid, because that's not for me to suggest or to say. This is between the descendant community and the federal government to negotiate. But basically, it's a rough estimate of what African Americans lost due to slavery. And by the way, this is slavery only. Of course, you have to add to that amount whatever was lost due to wage discrimination, Jim Crow discrimination, housing discrimination, and so on after slavery. So that's only a partial amount. But there is, you know, what the final amount is that is paid is up to negotiations between the parties involved. And also the modality is also something that I'm agnostic of, because I could imagine that it could be cash, as it was the case with Japanese American World War II internees. They received an apology letter and a check for $20,000 each. in 1988. It could also be, educational funds. It could be for the elderly. It could be pension payments. It could be health accounts. It could be a whole range of things. The main thing is that wealth be transmitted, not just cash, not that it just diffuses again, but that there is actually a wealth transfer that allows African American families to build wealth with the same opportunities as white Americans today, which is not the case by now.
Jordan Love online says, "I think reparations should be a combination of land and money." Have you seen a history of that when it comes down to reparations across the world?
There are various proposals. I think with Native Americans, sometimes there is land involved and sometimes there's money involved. And I think that could be the case with African American reparations as well. I think the modality is really something that the parties involved should think about and negotiate. That's not for me as an outsider, so to speak, to propose one over the other. I think these are all good ideas.
What's next for America? There's talk. We know it's been part of the conversations early in and for the race for the White House. How do things like this happen? Do they need a 50% majority vote, or does it have to be a 2/3 of a vote in Congress?
Well, currently, the bill that originally Representative John Conyers proposed first in 1989, H.R. 40, was reintroduced in every house since then, and was debated about last year for the first time since Reconstruction. And that bill is basically an acknowledgement that slavery was an injustice, and a setting up a commission that studies the effects of slavery on African Americans living today and making recommendations about reparations. But the bill itself does not contain reparations. So, I would say the next step would be to pass that bill. I'm not sure whether it's even still necessary, because since that proposal was first made, so much research has been done that basically by now we could probably start issuing reparations. And I don't see this as a one-shot game. Maybe starting with slavery reparations and then moving on to Jim Crow reparations and other outstanding debts. But I think it's time to actually start getting the ball rolling. Another thing that I think is even more important is that there be a national debate about reparations, that there be an honest debate, that we look at our history, and I say our because I'm a naturalized American citizen and I identify with this country, and I view this as my history just as well, because when I walk on the streets in this country, even in the North, I know that enslaved Africans laid the foundations, most likely. The fields were made, workable. The swamps were drained by slave labor. The buildings were built by slave labor. Even the buildings that housed the government from which I benefit were built by slave labor. So I feel that I'm benefiting from the slavery of the past. And I think all immigrants do, and then of course people living here anyway, indirectly, and some people benefit directly by inheriting estates that were accumulated through slave labor. So at one point there has to be an honest conversation about that, and about the huge wealth gap. It's the biggest racial gap in the United States, is the wealth gap that results from this history. And I think it's time to have an honest conversation about that.
Another question from online, Giovanni Bravo Riaz says, "Do you think that colonial subjects like Puerto Rico, Guam, Hawaii, and others deserve reparations too?" Good questions. Good questions.
Those are great questions. I think, as a general principle, I think if there is historical injustice, there is a basis for reparations discussion. I think that should be a norm in international relations. Sometimes, though, people say, well, you can talk about slavery reparations if you don't also talk about, and then Native American reparations, Puerto Rico, Hawaii, others. And I say one should not be pitted against the other. So I think you have to take it step by step. I think the descendants of African American slaves have waited the longest together with Native Americans. So I think those should be prioritized, but I think these other groups have absolute a right to talk about reparations as well.
So what do we know history-wise in regards to reparations? Have any other countries in Africa been repaired for the damages there?
Africa?
Yeah.
I don't know of any country that has received reparations in Africa.
Yeah, like have France paid anybody for all the invasions? We know they colonized almost half of Africa is colonized by France.
Well, I know that France received reparations for slavery.
They received. And I know. Are you talking about the Haiti situation?
Yes.
Which is crazy.
Haiti paid reparations to France again for the abolition of slavery, and that money went to the French slave owners from 1825 all the way to 1947. And that was a crippling debt, and that explains why Haiti is such a poor country today. It's scandalous. That money should be repaid right away. That's even more of a priority than the American case, is that Haiti receive its money back from France. In 2004, they demanded that money back, and France politely declined. But Haiti was not even asking for slavery reparations. That would be a much larger amount.
Right.
They asked to get their reparations back that they paid to France for the abolition of slavery.
So basically, family, if you're listening, watching, Haiti paid for their freedom.
Yes.
They beat France and then paid them money.
Yes.
And that conversation doesn't really hear, you don't hear that conversation on the mainstream media. There's always a effort to demonize the good people of Haiti.
Yes, and that's why you see this picture here in the back on my wall is Toussaint Louverture.
All right.
I think that this is also something that we need to do in American history is to change the rewriting of history that took place in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, where Haiti was written out of American history, slavery was written out of American history, and the contribution of African Americans was written out of American history. And instead, the Lost Cause myth and all this stuff, these Confederate memorials went up. And Haiti did so much for the abolition of slavery in the United States by being the first country in the world to abolish slavery and permanently, and inspiring the abolitionist movement worldwide. They sent troops to Latin America to end slavery with Simon Bolivar's movement, and they inspired Americans. I mean, a lot of the founding fathers talked about Toussaint Louverture's genius, and today we have completely forgotten about this person, about this people that did so much for American slavery to be abolished as well.
There wouldn't be a Louisiana Purchase if it wasn't for Dessalines and Toussaint Louverture.
That is absolutely right. The Louisiana Purchase is one thing, but I think that pales in comparison to the fact that the uprising in Haiti inspired the abolitionist movement, because before that, it was a couple of crazy people that demanded abolition, but it was not taken seriously.
Right.
The enslaved of Haiti rose up. Everybody took it seriously. And I think that is a big contribution to the movement.
G-Man just joined the conversation. He asked, do you think it would cost about $3 trillion? Your total was what, 19 trillion?
Yeah, 19 trillion.
In 19 trillion, G-Man. And in comparison to America budget, I don't know what the budget is right now. What do you think that is? 19 trillion in comparison to America's budget?
That I don't know. I think this would have to be financed by loans, just like the reparations in Great Britain, where I'm not sure that the budget could do this by itself. But I'm not an economist, so I can't really make any recommendations on that. And said it's not, I'm not suggesting that this is the amount that should in the end be paid. I'm not fixating on any amount. There's various estimates. Some are lower, some are higher. I'm just saying there needs to be a conversation about it, an honest conversation about it now.
Before we go, Dr. Kramer, we know that America pays Israel every year.
Mm-hmm.
They have done so pretty much since the Holocaust, right?
Yeah.
Not directly after the Holocaust, but after the Holocaust, they pay Israel a good chunk of money. And not saying that they shouldn't do it. And I think America compensated Japan, right? They compensated some people that was in the concentration camps.
Oh, they compensated Japanese American World War II internees. So these were Americans that were being compensated.
Yeah, being compensated for how America treated them.
Yes.
And I know America has compensated the Native Americans.
There was some puny reparations efforts, but yeah.
But since then, they've been able to get their own land, their own separate nation, their own government, and they probably still owe more their land. Are there any other groups of people left that America has not compensated?
That is a good question. I'm sure that that's the case, but I think the most prominent example is just African Americans, because it's the largest group and it's the most obviously due.
What do you think we should do as citizens of this country? Who should we be talking to make sure this happens?
Lawmakers. Contact your representatives to get HR 40 out for discussion. I mean, right now it doesn't seem very well. In the House, it might stand a chance, but in the Senate, it probably doesn't. Who knows what happens after the elections. Yeah, the first order of business is, of course, to turn out to vote in the upcoming elections, most importantly.
How can people find out more information about you and your work?
They can always contact me. My profile is at the University of Connecticut. They can just Google Thomas Kramer at the University of Connecticut and drop me an email, and I'll send them articles if they want or engage in conversation.
Now, and also, Germany did compensate Jews, right?
Yeah, Germany paid reparations in 1952. It was an agreement that contained a payment, you know, payment to Israel for the resettling of Holocaust survivors in Israel. It contained a payment to the Jewish Claims Conference. I'm not sure if I have the name right, an organization that dealt with Jewish people, including in the diaspora. And the third component and the most important one was that Germany passed legislation for individual compensation of victims. And that's how my friend Michu got his reparations pension through this law. And that was passed in 1952 and has been going on all this time and is still ongoing as long as there are still survivors out there.
Have you talked to any Republicans that believe in reparations?
I've been interviewed by conservatives about reparations, and it's actually an interesting thing because I'm surprised, to tell you the truth, that reparations is becoming an issue on the liberal side, because liberal policies tend to be policies that include everybody. And so the idea of having a policy specifically for African American descendants of the enslaved seems kind of strange. Also, in liberal policies, there's usually an idea we look to the future and not necessarily a detailed accounting of the past. Looking to the past and honoring merit and labor in the past and the work ethic and everything, those are conservative values. And so it's not a surprise that the first person that I'm aware of in the mainstream that raised the issue of reparations was Charles Krauthammer, a conservative commentator who called for reparations. I think this was as far back as 2000 or 2001. Mm-hmm. And he was he opposed policies like affirmative action or any other race conscious policies. But he said that we clearly owe a debt to African Americans, and this should be a one-time lump sum payment. And he said that in 2001 or so. So it's actually a quite conservative policy ideologically, but strangely was picked up on the liberal side. But there are conservatives who definitely entertain the notion.
Dr. Kramer, thank you so much for your time today. Got to have you back. And this is definitely need to be an ongoing conversation. Need to be music about it. Need to be top story. Need to be reports. We need to be part of the debates. We cannot let this thing go, go to the sidelines. Thank you for your fight, because I know it's not easy being where you at. I hope you're tenured there.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate
it. It's been an honor. Dr. Thomas Kramer, make sure you have a good day, okay?
Thank you. Same to you. Thank you.